Hey everyone, John Wertheim here. It's this week's Sports Illustrated / Tennis Channel Tennis Podcast. A short podcast, but a good podcast. Our guest, a gentleman whose name I suspect will ring a bell, Andre Agassi, is with us. This is just quick conversation, just two guys in their mid-40s with a couple of teenagers at home. We've had Andre on before. He was terrific. Of course, he was terrific. His default mode is terrific. Always a good person to have a conversation with. For some context, Andre was at the Longines store here downtown in the Oculus. If you don't know the Oculus, put it on your list next time you come to New York. But he was at the Longines shop. That is the Swiss watchmaker that, of course, Andre endorses. So does his wife, Steph Graf. We call her Steph now. So we had made a plan to meet. I didn't even have to go outdoors to see him. Just went down to the basement of our building here at Sports Illustrated, and there was Andre. We talked a lot, and I realized we weren't even recording. So we had to turn on our phone a little bit later than anticipated. That's okay. We had a nice conversation. This is only about 15 minutes, but it's great. Andre talks a bit about his life these days. We talk 8 years after Open, his autobiography, and we talk a lot about Novak Djokovic and what Andre is looking forward to and what that relationship holds in store going forward in 2018. Andre obviously joined the team in around the time of the French Open, and it did not go as planned, but they're sticking together, and Andre will be in Australia with Novak to start the season. Anyway, nice conversation with an all-time favorite. Here is Andre Agassi.
How are you?
I'm fantastic. Good to see you. Thank you, John. Likewise.
I was thinking today's an anniversary of sorts. You want to guess?
So where are we? November. What's the date today?
I was thinking 8 years ago this week, your book comes out.
Ah, okay. Yeah, it came out in November.
Right about that?
That's
right. First week of November?
From November 9th, maybe.
2009, right?
Yeah, 2009.
I was thinking if you write part two, which a lot of people would love to read. What are you stressing?
Yeah, it's a great question. There was so much content in the first, 36 years of life, but I feel like I've lived a lifetime even since, quite frankly. And I would say probably around my mission and the scalability of what I'm doing with my schools. And I don't know how I would word it or focus on it, but the idea that thinking outside the box is you're capable of really creating societal change. And that's kind of what the last, more or less, 8 years has been about, me figuring out how to do that.
You say that apolitically. That's just a life lesson.
Well, yeah. I mean, listen, I'll be political once there's a children's union. Then I'll put the CU next to my name, the initials, and say I'm for the children's union. So if anybody can help me with that mission, they're a partner.
I was thinking life being into irony. I typed your name into Google to see when that book came out exactly.
Right.
You know what? You ever Google yourself?
No, I can't say.
Come on.
I can't say I have.
There's a lot about a baseball player with your
life.
I think it was one of these crazy ironies that one of the central themes of your book was sports parenting. And here you are in 2017. You're you're a sports parent.
Yeah.
How do you process that?
You know, it's actually harder for me to watch other parents in that environment than it is sort of being a parent. I think people have always asked me and Steph, both publicly and privately, what's it like for your kids with, your parents
right,
being successful
right.
at a professional sport. And what they fail to recognize is there's an asset that goes along with what we've done, which is they get a look behind the curtain every day and they recognize what it's not. You know what I mean? So it's like
a good way to look at it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people look at being a sports athlete as what it is. They get the luxury of seeing what it's not. So their context and balance is actually been relatively comfortable for us.
But I was thinking also from your perspective, does this make you wish you'd played it? Like, leave your son out of it. Does this make you wish you'd played a team sport? I mean, do you sort of see sports in a different way?
I always felt like, I did highlight that in my book as well.
Right.
I always felt like I'd be better at a team sport. focusing on somebody else rather than myself. You know, I was good at sabotaging my own game and my own mind. But I think a team sport would have been a better, easier way for me to go, a more tangible inspiration on a daily basis.
You look good. Your body's holding up.
Yeah, I mean, it's a losing proposition as you get older, right? It's a battle you keep fighting, but life on my terms, I'm healthy, I'm good, I can't complain. I mean, I don't care to drop anything on the floor and have to pick it up.
I was going to say, you're, these everyday, sort of everyday movements that back problems militate against. You're doing okay, though?
Yeah, I am, but again, on my terms. I mean, something can go wrong in a hurry if I attempt to, you know, do something out of my control.
We're going to see you in Australia, aren't we?
We are. I'm looking forward to going down. I figured, why not? It gave me a sort of a starting point of the year, a reconnection to the game of sorts, helping Novak out, and also deciding to pick up a racket. I'm doing a little differently now. I gave myself a number of months to try to get my body right for it. So I'm hoping everything...
For coaching?
For just being available for what I can do, and playing and having fun and hopefully creating a few memories for a place that, has been a special part of my career.
I was thinking that for both of you guys, really, you got out of the box fast.
Yeah.
Between the two of you, you probably got, ten Australian Opens between the two of you.
Yeah, hard to say. Hard to say out of the box fast when I didn't play for 10 years, right? So that's part of my regret, too, is not being down there sooner. You know, it was such a successful venue for me, but the people were always so embracing despite my lack of engagement for the first decade of my career.
You think in those terms? You would have scheduled differently?
I do. In the sense that I never could have guessed how much I would have enjoyed being down there. I mean, it was perfect for my disposition. It was very relaxed. I was comfortable. Wherever I'm comfortable, I tend to play better, and I like the conditions.
What I was going to say was that a tennis? Is that a tennis discussion? Is that the court and the surface and the heat, or is that spiritually? It's the start of the year. It's all sorts of promise. Melbourne's a cool city. I mean, what was the comfort?
Yeah, the comfort, unquestionably, where you like to play, meaning from the elements, the bounce of the ball to the heat, to the wind, right, which is always what I loved. I love a court where I could play with spin using the wind. I could hit the ball flat through the court. You know, I had options to bring out my strength, which was a bit of versatility in my shot making, and I love the heat. But I was also always prepared for it. You know, remember back in my time, they used to call my team an entourage, right? Now everybody has a team because they realize how much investment goes into it. And one of the ways I always invested in myself was sort of fine-tuning the end of my year, preparing to start another one. And so I always felt like I had a leg up as well.
Remember, Gil would make you run the hill on Christmas Eve, and 2 weeks later you'd be on the flight down.
Well, yeah, I don't know if he'd make me, but we certainly had a strong commitment to one another for those dreams and objectives.
You like this guy, don't you? I mean, it's a tennis relationship, but personally, you relate to Novak, don't you?
I do. I mean, I think he's an incredibly gifted person in multiple ways. I mean, what we see on the tennis court's one side of it. I think his mental and intellectual and analytical capacity is really special and unique, and I think his heart is bigger than people realize. And when I say heart, I don't even mean just a giving, generous spirit. I'm talking about a competitor's heart, you know, just his fight, his ability to dig deep. And him connecting those dots are really important, and at this stage of his career, it's essential. And I don't want him... He doesn't need me to win again, I assure you. But I do think I can help him be better than he's ever been, and that's my objective, is to do it easier. And I don't mean easier as in the score line. I mean easier as in the wear and tear he puts on his own psyche in the process.
I was going to say, we played dime sword psychologist here. You are not scared off by someone who's having some conversations with themselves.
No, I mean, if you notice everything I've kind of done in my life, I've probably chosen the hardest way to go about it. I mean, writing my book from entering the sport of tennis with the way I chose to do that. I mean, I just sort of kind of follow. I follow the path that just seems lit to me, you know, and then I try to figure it out. And here I am jumping into. To a guy that's won way more than I've won at a time in his life that he's probably at his lower point, and then going to jumping in the middle of a defending the French Open to so
yeah
I'm
right
not, I'm not scared, of, I'm not scared right. of challenges right. And it's problem solving at its finest, and that also inspires me.
And you know, 31 years old isn't what he used to be.
It's not, and I think he's an exaggeration of that, quite frankly. I mean, unfortunate fracture in his elbow that is, we're probably a week away from knowing that's completely behind him. But other than that particular obstacle, he's really 30 going on 25. I mean,
his body
is special, yeah. I think if he does it right and if he wants to, I think when he's 36, 37 years old, he will redefine what that age looks like as well.
Is that Tom Brady of tennis kind of stuff?
You know, you can't predict the future,
right.
But his body's pretty special.
How much of that is just sort of wear and tear and mileage on the odometer? And how much of that is technology and treat? I mean, you know, you famously 25 years ago had a diet that did not approximate Novak's diet. You used a racket and you used, I don't know, Luxilon came along probably late in your career. I mean, how much of that is just technology and progress, and how much of that is, like you say, a special body?
Yeah, I think in Novak's case, it's probably 80-20. I mean, he's blessed with some special gifts. I mean, even if you look at video of him playing when he was young, his body was pretty unique. His sense of balance and his ability to move from a wide base and actually protect important parts of the body. So there's no question it's part of that. There's no question there's a lot of science to it. I mean, you know, he doesn't go about anything without putting a lot of thought, and he does a lot of research, and from his diet to his fluids and replacing and recovering, and I mean there's a lot of science these guys are putting into it now. And you know, something I always valued with Gil way before a lot of people put thought behind it.
You have a wife, you have children, you have other interests. How do we get you to commentate, though?
How do you get me to
Can
leave?
We do a Kickstarter? Can we...
To leave home for 2 weeks...
You're coaching anyway.
It's true. But, I appreciate the question. I take that as a compliment. I want to be
Please.
Involved in the game. I don't know. I mean, I'll stick my head in there every now and then for the fun of it. You know, I'm not a big fan of working for a living anymore. You
it's
know?
Overrated.
So I don't sort of, as well with Novak, I don't accept job positions. I just kind of choose to live and to do what I do. And I wouldn't mind jumping in with Darren and jumping in with Brad and having some fun every now and then. And it might give me an opportunity of being on the road. But, I like talking the game unquestionably on a grout level. And I get to do that now with Novak and... maybe I'll do it on TV too. Who knows?
Tennis Channel will be in Australia.
Yeah, that's
just,
right.
Just saying.
Okay.
You what's your relationship with the sport now, though?
Evolving. It's evolving. I think when I left the game, I knew I wanted to put down the racket for a little while. That's your first instinct. I think it is for everybody. Then I said I got to stay involved. I helped Jim start that Legends thing. And so I played throughout that. I partnered a long time ago, 10 years now, with Longines as an example of my support and respect for the game. They've been a great supporter of it and also my mission. So there's been a lot of overlap there. So I've kind of spent some time connecting in different ways. This Novak thing is its own thing for me, but I also recognize that it's doing right by the game to make sure that one of the best to ever play this game has a future and a history that reflects that reality. So I'm trying different ways to get involved. So it's always evolving and morphing.
Still seeking.
You know, it beats the alternative. You know, beats the alternative.
It's a good way to look at it. Yeah, exactly.
It does.
You played enough golf.
Yeah.
This was great. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you,
see you. seen Melbourne in 2 months.
I'll be down there with bells on.
8 years since Open. Can you believe that?
It's gone by fast. I mean, really fast. I suppose as you get older, everything seems
okay. I was going to say, that's, beats the alternative.
Yeah, and then you look at the kids grow. It's like, wow, 16 and 14, like two strangers almost in some ways.
Are you ready for, you're like me. Two years from now, your house is going to be a little quieter, and 4 years from now, it's going to be a lot quieter.
I'm hoping that Steph and I are the friends we think we are.
To each other.
Yes, to each other.
Yeah, exactly. I think you'll be all right there.
Thanks.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
All right. Thanks to our guest, Andre Agassi. Always a pleasure talking with him. Again, I feel guilty, Jamie Lasanti. We were just bullshitting. Can I say that? We were just talking shop, talking about our kids, and I did not hit record. So hence that podcast was a little shorter than we'd intended. But always good talking to Andre. I thought a lot of interesting comments about Novak Djokovic. He is... Andre Agassi does not have to be doing this. He is not making many decisions without volition. So he clearly is on board for this Novak Djokovic experiment in 2018, which I thought was interesting. If I told you, Jamie, that before I started covering tennis, but when I was in high school, this was Nick Kyrgios. This was the rad rock star, erratic tennis player who we were never quite sure where his passion resided and whether his mental game would catch up to his physical talent. Would you believe that?
I would not.
One of the great transformations in all of sports. To talk with Andre and hear his wisdom and his perspective and to think back to the late 80s. It's why we should not give up on athletes. People are evolving organisms. People change.
Is it why you give Nick Kyrgios the benefit of the doubt sometimes?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I don't know if Nick Kyrgios is ever going to reach this point where Andre is. That's a high bar. But yeah, exactly. People change. We all grow up. We all evolve. That's a good point. We're not static characters. I would say two of the great underrated stories in sports, apart from the Williams sisters, which I still maintain is the most underrated story in sports. Andre Agassi married to Steffi Graf, a little like, this would be Michael Jordan marrying Cheryl Miller. And we don't really talk about them a whole lot, do we?
We don't, but they choose to kind of stay out of the spotlight, which, is admirable. It's kind of hard in these social media days to do that, and they do it very well.
They do not have much of a social media presence. That they may be onto something. You are as famous as you want to be. I'm sure if they wanted to be Instagram king and queen, and if they wanted to go to movie premieres and events every night where they could be photographed and in the public eye, they could. Sounds like they would rather stay home with their kids and help them with homework. Good for them. I still say, though, tremendously underrated story that these two towering figures, these are 30-plus majors in one household, and we sort of take it for granted.
And the irony is that their kid is...
Yeah, exactly. Is a great baseball prospect. I always said if Andre Agassi and Steffi Graf's kid grew up to be like a florist, that would be great. I suspect they made a conscious choice to stay away from tennis. But clearly some hand-eye coordination did get handed down. Let me ask you a question. We wrote this week... in the mailbag, I got a bunch of questions. This was a few days ago already, but the Next Gen finals in Milan, bit of a rocky start there with the draw ceremony. But what was they attempted to integrate the rich heritage of Milan's fashion scene. That didn't go so well when female models suggestively told players what groups they belonged in. What, on sort of the outrage spectrum, where do you find yourself, Jamie Lasanti?
I have to say, honestly, at first, I try and stay off social media on the weekends. So I, did not see it happen, did not follow along as people were kind of being outraged about it. And then I just kind of saw the headlines. But then I saw the video, which I had not seen. And, when you're watching something on TV and you're so uncomfortable that you just want to, like, jump in the TV and pull the people out of there because you feel so bad and you feel so awkward and you're miles and miles away.
Jared Donaldson, I will save you.
Yes. So it was, I mean, it's one thing you have, you know, you have a draw ceremony, you have a woman there or women there dressed in attire that is, you know, maybe represents the city's culture or something. Like, fine, you want to do that and you want to have them, you know, hold up an A or B standing next to the tournament director, you know, fine. This, the dancing, the attire itself, the runway, the music, the revealing on body parts was, it's just weird and wrong, gross. You mentioned Jared Donaldson. I mean, the players were visibly uncomfortable.
Right, right.
So not only are you putting, you know, these players in an uncomfortable, awkward situation that they can't get out of, they're stuck there. You know, you're doing it at a tournament that is, hasn't even started yet, and you have been kind of plugging and promoting and kind of was like supposed to be really great for a while, and then like it all comes crashing down in the 5 minutes that you're announcing what players are in what group. I mean,
maybe if sexual harassment and objectification were a little bit more in the news these days, they would be hip to that. No, this was a colossally tone deaf. I think you raise a good point too, which is you've got this event. It's never been held before. It's the players 21 and under who, you know, in theory, this is the next generation, but these are also players who haven't quite gotten their due because of Federer, Nadal, and Murray Djokovic taking up all the oxygen. We've got all these crazy innovations. Some of them I actually think have worked pretty well. Some of them seem a little silly, but this is not a conventional event that sells itself. You really need to nail the marketing. And within 5 minutes before anyone had hit their first serve, I'm getting text alerts about the disgraceful this and that, and Judy Murray's tweeting, and Mauresmo and Billie Jean King. It just seemed like if there were one event where you wanted to go pretty conservative on the marketing and not have controversy, it was this tournament where, A, it's never been held before, B, the whole point of it is to try and promote these players, and C, you've got all these wacky innovations and rule changes and twists on conventional scoring. This is not what the ATP wanted.
The funny thing that I thought was that if this was a tournament, you know, if this was the ATP Finals with Roger Federer and Nadal and kind of all these top players who have established themselves and they do media appearances and they, you know, they do things with brands and products, you have to think that they have a little bit of a say and an understanding of what they're getting into when they do things like that, right?
Yeah, exactly. You're
taking these kids who are, you know, supposedly the next gen, the people who are going to replace them, who may have not gotten that type of training or have not had that experience, and you're throwing them into something. I mean, I'm sure none of them knew that was going to happen until they got there that day, or, you know, someone said, all right, this is how the draw is going to work. I mean, none of those kids are going to say, no, I'm not doing that.
Right.
Whereas somebody, you know, 10 years older has the experience and, you know, the understanding to say, no, I'm not putting myself in that situation.
36-year-old Roger Federer with tens of millions of dollars
is not doing
endorsement
that.
Relationships, he's not going to be in that situation.
But that's
when you're
so unfair.
21 years old, and the whole reason you're at this event is for promotion and media coverage. I think that's a really good point, too. I mean, some of it I think is just the difference between a 21-year-old and a man in their 30s. But
of course. But
no, but Roger Federer's leverage in this situation and his experience in this situation is not the same as Denis Shapovalov. So point taken. I don't know if you saw the London event. The draw ceremony was delayed when Boris Becker was stuck in traffic. Not quite as scandalous, but maybe I think a draw ceremonies are probably something the ATP ought to spend some time reassessing this offseason.
The tennis has been good.
Tennis has been good. And I think some of these innovations have been pretty good too. It's a lot to handle. I mean, there are nine different innovations. But I don't know. Maybe we don't need blinds people after all. And maybe I'm not even offended by the four game sets. It's been interesting. And I think that this is probably, I like the thinking. I like, if nothing else, the fact that the ATP has said nothing is sacred. But boy, that was a whiff on having the models introduce the players. All right. So thanks, Jamie. You padded that out. Richard Deitch always says we need to have more conversation, and especially when the host neglects to start recording Andre Agassi, and we only get 15 minutes. Next time you come along, you'd like this guy. Just another adult in his mid-40s with two teenage kids. All right, that does it for this week. Again, thanks to Andre. Nice revisiting with him. Thanks to Jamie, as always. We'll be back soon with another guest. Thanks for listening, everyone. Keep the suggestions coming. You can download this podcast and subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and whatever fine podcasts are sold. Have a good week, everyone. Enjoy the matches in London, and see you later in the month.